this sound was recorded on the 19th of March, 1959. Sitter Rose Crete, medium Leslie Flint.
Thanks, sir. Bam, Roger.
Communicator, Florence Ziegfeld, discussing Chopin's music. This tape recording is not a complete full-length recording of the original seance. Part of the seance was personal to Mrs. Crete, and only the general and interesting remarks made by Florence Ziegfeld have been re-recorded for replay.
I've been listening to a recent work of your friend Friedrich's.
You've been doing a work?
No, I've been listening to one of his new works.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely amazing piece of work. One hardly knows which way to begin to try and even describe it or depict it. Switch's told you all about it anyway.
Well, I don't know if this is the latest one. He has told me about one that he had to make a composition about a huge temple with all nationalities.
That's it.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Well, there has been a magnificent edifice, a glorious building that's been dedicated, and he wrote a score, I suppose, music, you know, which really is quite beyond it. But in fact, it seemed to bring in national music, as you understand national music, or music representing pretty well every nation, I think, on earth, you know.
Oh, yes, he was good at that when he was on earth.
Very representative of all the different nations and peoples, and somehow it seemed to depict the aspirations and the development of peoples and nations and all interwoven, entwined together. And the most marvelous sort of... I don't know if he told you that in the final part of this work, because I'm not a musician, excuse the rough way I describe it, in the final part of this work, is a chorus of thousands of voices. Of all different nationalities, and it was absolutely fabulous. It combined with the orchestration and the voices, it was fabulous.
Oh, how thrilling, sir. I wish I could
have a jubilate, you know, something very jubilant and full of power and full of emotion and full of everything that one can imagine seemed to be put into this work, you know. Well, it was the most fabulous sort of experience that one could ever hope. I mean, after you listen to something like that, well, you're absolutely exhausted. I mean, over here, we don't, in a sense, get tired, if you understand it. But I must admit that for the final part of the hour, I was absolutely worn out. I mean, I don't know how that could be, in a sense, because we're not conscious of tiredness as you are now. But somehow it seems as if it took something out of oneself, and in consequence you felt a sort of, although you felt a great peace and calmness, at the same time you felt as if you were suspended in space in such a way that you weren't touching, your feet weren't touching ground. There was no solidity. I don't know how to express this, but my experience
was raising you up to a very much
so carried away
that
it was as if all life was sort of being taken out of me for a time. I was sort of drifting. I don't know how to explain it.
Oh, wonderful. What did you feel like? You felt exactly like that, did you?
Well, I just felt as if somehow, as if I was being sort of carried away into the music, if that's a possible explanation.
Into the music?
Yes. And all the time this glorious harmony was going on, this glorious sound, this huge building seemed to be suffused with light, and all the walls seemed to be giving off a sort of glow, and according to the mood of the music, they seemed to be changing in a subtle kind of way. In fact, the lighting effect, it was extraordinary. I mean, if you tried to reproduce such a thing on the stage, you just couldn't do it. But after seeing that, one realizes what a dream.
quite.
Indeed it was, because music here does affect the whole atmosphere in such a way that it can and does change in colouring the whole atmosphere. And this building was, it was suffused with light. It was a mass, a seething mass of changing colour and glowing with vitality and vibration. The whole building seemed to be alive, and then with this enormous choral effect which came towards the close, it seemed to, as if somehow the whole building, although it was enormous, was going, as it were, higher and being moved outwards. I don't know how to explain
it. Floating up, you mean?
It was an extraordinary sensation. One felt as if one was no longer standing on one's feet, as if the ground was away from you, and the whole building seemed to be enlarging in such a way. The roof seemed to be going higher, and the walls seemed to be going further away, and one gradually seemed to be losing a kind of consciousness, and all one could think of, all one could experience, was this glorious sound.
Oh!
It was extraordinary.
Where was he at the time when all this was happening?
Well, you think he was right bang on in the centre of things.
Center?
Goodness me, if you'd really seen what was happening all around him.
Yes.
I mean, it was just as if he was bathed in the beautiful moonlight effect. I don't know how to begin to explain this. It's ridiculous to try and explain it to you, but it was as if he was standing under an enormous light.
Yes.
You know, when someone on the stage is having an arc light train on, and,
yes,
and they're in a sort of brilliant spotlight.
Yes.
And in a sense, or mind you, it doesn't really describe it, but in a sense, that was the impression would have been to anyone perhaps for the first time, then seeing anything like that, but they soon realized it wasn't the same thing. The whole thing was that I think that the whole of his being was so intent, was so sort of responding and so responsive to this music, that all around him it was as if there was an aura of light which was coming from his innermost self, you know, which was creating this effect.
I suppose he was giving all that out from himself. He didn't have a baton in his hand or anything, did he?
No, but he didn't stand still like a stuffed dummy, you know.
No.
It was there again, it was an art, it was something to experience and watch. He certainly didn't have any baton as a conductor would do in an orchestra on his side.
Yes.
But the whole of his being seemed to be so vital and so alive. And one was conscious of the movement of the hands and the head, and the body seemed to have a kind of rhythm about it. I don't know how to
have a kind of what?
Rhythm. Rhythm.
Oh, yes. Oh, how interesting.
You see, I don't know how to describe it. That's the trouble.
The rhythm, I suppose, although he must have made a great many movements while standing there, with his hands and his feet and his body.
Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, his body was so alive.
Yes.
It seemed to glow with this magnificent sort of pearly, wondrous light, and in it was this sort of vibrating personality. I mean, one was conscious of him and his personality. At the same time, one realized that all the sound, all the harmony, all the beauty in music was all there.
Oh.
It was the most extraordinary thing. One wondered almost as if all the artists, if all the orchestra were actually doing anything at all. Of course, we know they were, but one felt that he was doing everything, and they were sort of like puppets or mechanical dolls that were repeating everything, were doing everything that was coming from him. It was as if he was the Svengali or something, and they were just the instruments.
It was the most interesting thing.
It was rather like as if the people who were supplying the music were actually under his sort of hypnotic sort of force or vitality or power, or call it what you will, but he was the driving force, and they were sort of repeating, they were acting as it were under his sort of guidance. But if they couldn't make a mistake, that was the extraordinary thing I felt about it. I mean, for instance, if you were at a concert and you, in the ordinary way on earth, you'd No, they're ordinary human beings playing ordinary instruments, and they had a very good conductor, there's always a possibility somebody might slip up somewhere.
Yes.
But with this, there wasn't that feeling at all.
No.
You begin to realize that all these people were artists in themselves, but their art was so intermingled with the art of the man who'd composed the music, and there was such love and devotion, and such sort of tremendous sort of, well, oneness, that's the only way to put it, you know, that they played as one man, and that one man was the man who was there, who was composing and conducting and creating and making everything possible. In other words, they were happy and thrilled and everything, because they were under his control.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Did they have instruments?
Oh, sure, they had instruments of which I have no knowledge, and I've seen. And with this particular concert, there was a new instrument in the shape or form of a piano, but it was rather like it had several decks, you know. It was quite fabulous, and it was a young fellow that everybody's one of his pupils, that was the leading pianist, and he was absolutely fantastic. I've never seen a man's hands move across keys as this young fellow's did. I mean, they were just. Well, I mean, it was in a sense a miracle.
Well, I'm so glad you're telling me all this. It's
most
wonderful.
Well, I felt, you know, that he was under some hypnotic influence. I think that's the whole point. I think that's the matter. When I talk about hypnotism, I don't mean in the narrow sense as understood on earth.
No.
But all these were willing subjects. And they were all sort of souls who were devoted to music, and Frederick's music in particular. And I think they were his own group, you see, that he had selected and developed and trained over probably many years of earthly time, as you understand that. And they were playing and acting, as it were, as one person. They were all interpreting perfectly everything that Frederick had ever written. I should imagine that he gets the greatest thrill out of it all, because probably the only time his music is ever interpreted as he wanted it to be interpreted is over here.
Yes.
And when sometimes I hear you talking about music and about artists, I think it's interesting because he couldn't fail to be uniform a music or musician, good, bad, and different. Anyone who's a musician is a friend of Frederick's. But the point is that he has such high standards, and it must be very difficult for him sometimes to show, in a sense,
enthusiasm
which you will never feel.
You're looking at me there.
No, I'm not hitting at anyone. I'm just stating a fact.
Yes.
I mean, for instance, if you get very thrilled at a piece of music that's played, if you understand it very well indeed, you're very excited, very thrilled as a musician and artist, and you're very glad to be. But you must remember that Friedrich has listened to music, and he has heard compositions and played himself and others also here in such a way that whatever you may hear must seem to him very poor in comparison.
Yes, quite poor.
Well, it doesn't belittle yours.
No.
But the point is that here he has accomplished in music what no other man has. I shouldn't think, anyway.
You really?
I shouldn't think so. I mean, there may be. I mean, Frederick probably wouldn't agree. I wouldn't dare perhaps tell you all I tell you if you were here in case you didn't want you to know. But the point is that. I should say, there's a no shadow of doubt that he is the greatest musician.
Yes, he was.
But he won't have that. He said, oh no, there are others, there's Mozart and others. And he seems to put Mozart on a pedestal.
Yes, he always has done that.
I think that shows a nice trait in his character. I think the fact that he can appreciate some other musician to that extent shows that it is this humbleness of spirit in music, anyway, that makes him the great musician that he is. Because any musician that has a highfalutin idea of themselves is not really a good musician. For that matter, they're not a good artist or technician in any form. Because a real artist has never satisfied himself.
Right.
And Frederick is never satisfied.